Good evening, everyone, and welcome to RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. I'm Chris Michael. Keith Grohler taking a much-deserved vacation this week. So joining me in studio, Phillies beat writer from The Morning Call, Mr. Stephen Gross. Steve, thanks for joining us, and a lot of baseball talk on tonight's program.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Even though the Phillies might not be that good, there's still tons to talk about, so...
You picked a perfect time to be here. Tom Hausnick was on a month ago, and the team was going through its worst stretch maybe ever. And now they've won three in a row, and things are looking good. They're going to make the playoffs and, you know, bring in all these free agents and win the World Series next year after winning three in a row. At least a certain Phillies fan just told me that yesterday. But two things. First of all, a personal note. In a few weeks, you're going to be married. So are you excited about that big day coming up?
Yeah, very excited. It's a little less than 2 months away now, so been busy with that. But definitely excited, looking forward to it.
You don't have to worry about Phillies playoffs, so your plans are still on, scheduled?
Yeah, I'm going to probably miss a few games towards the middle of September there. But
It's probably a good thing.
I don't have to worry about long playoff run or anything after that. No. Just the Phantoms starting up.
And Keith, another Husky, I hope he's shelling out a lot of money for your wedding and taking good care of you. And
I haven't gotten anything in the mail yet. I've been looking for it.
Yeah.
So he
has a lot of money here. Get him to open up that wallet here. He's done a lot of things for a lot of years. So he should really just give something. A fellow Husky guy following in his footsteps at the Morning Call, doing a great job. I'm expecting him to give you a major, major gift real soon.
I'll have to ask him about that. Yeah. Make sure it didn't get lost somewhere.
Yeah, and check. If not, make sure fill out your inbox, email him, making sure he sends Steve and his fiance a lovely gift. All right, Phillies talk. We'll start with the Phillies. Your beat, of course. And I want to ask you about a kind of a unique question because I'm sorry for using this term. Back in the day when I covered the Phillies in the 90s and the 2000s, there was a lively clubhouse. The 93 was, you know, off the charts, but it was lively and players could get together and they joke around and they play cards, they talk baseball. Some would not talk about baseball. There'd be smaller groups kind of in the back, but there was a lot of interaction. And for the first time in about 5 years, I was down in the clubhouse the other day and it was like a morgue. I thought I went into the auxiliary locker room or something by the wrong place. There were like 6 or 7 players there, but they're on their phones. They're playing, you know, different apps and games and they got the earbuds on and silent. I mean, is that just how modern clubhouses have evolved, or did I just pick a bad day to go down there?
I think it might be a little bit of both. Since I started covering the beat in 2014. Mm-hmm. Since then, it seems like each year, and I think some of this is a schedule, some of this is players getting in more early work. As I walk into the ballpark sometimes at 3 o'clock, sometimes even earlier, there's players, more players than there have been in past years, out on the field, taking extra ground balls, getting more swings in. So I think some of it's, and I know guys are, you know, inside in the cages, getting early work in. So I think there's a lot less, a lot fewer players in the clubhouse before games. So that contributes to some of it. And then the ones that are in there, yeah, they have the earbuds on, they have the phones on. But there still is, and I think this year more than the last couple years, because there's less veterans in there, there's more younger guys, more continue to come up throughout this year. I think there is more joking around. McCannon is someone that I've seen. He always walks through the clubhouse. He's telling jokes or joking around with different guys. He tries to keep it loose. It's definitely more loose than even when Ryan Sandberg was there. He almost avoided the clubhouse, actually, when he was there. And things were a little bit more uptight then, too.
Yeah, and could you hear a lot of fans saying this is boring baseball, the players don't look like they're having fun, it's boring to watch, and I didn't know if that's translated to it, but you know, you make a good point about as the veterans kind of go out, the younger players feel more free to express themselves, and I think that's what they're going to be doing. Hopefully they can get a couple deadline deals and trade a few more veterans, and maybe we'll see some of those younger players up at the big league level and then kind of feel more comfortable at the big league level.
Yeah, what I saw with the younger guys when there were still, you know, Ryan Howard, Chase Utley. Chase Utley's a good example because he was just very, you know, he would carry himself. He would let his play do the talk and his work ethic. He was not one that was very vocal in the clubhouse, at least when it was open. So I think a lot of the younger guys, when they got up there, they just kind of looked up to those guys and, you know, went off of them. If Utley wasn't talking much or very quiet around the clubhouse, they kind of took the lead on that one. So I think That's kind of attributed to that, too.
You mentioned Pete McCann, and he's been hammered by a lot of the fan base, especially since they signed him to a contract extension, and their record really went south since then, which usually has the opposite effect when a team makes that. I think he does a very good job. He keeps them loose. He works hard. When you talk to him, he gives coherent answers. He's trying to address problems, and he seems like he and the coaching staff are doing a lot of the right things. It's just not clicking. Do you think he's going to last more than a year?
I think so. He very much has his hands tied. I mean, if you look at the roster that he has.
It's kind of like the Sixers.
Exactly,
you know, through this process.
I've written this a few times, but when people are critical of McCannon, I often say, I don't think, you go back, Joe Torre, Bobby Cox, any of these managers, I don't think the greatest managers in the game, if they had this team, would get them to 500 or finish a season at 500. It's just, he's doing, I think, the best he can with the roster that he's been given. You know, it's all whatever GM Matt Klentak puts up there. He's just kind of, and he's kind of admitted it a few times this year that at times when they were really struggling, especially the offense, he just, nothing seems to work. He just kind of keeps shuffling things around until something, and I know last year he said some similar things too at different points in the season. So I think, and giving him the extension that they did, the Phillies, I think as long as nothing really goes south, he doesn't lose the clubhouse at some point, I think that they have the confidence in him, and they would at least like to, as long as this, we have no idea how long this rebuild could take. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, I think they're thinking we'd like to give him at least a shot, you know, whether it's a year or two even, when this team is competitive, that, you know, he's, reward him almost, because he's led them through the rebuild, give him a year or two with, you know, a roster that you could do some damage with.
In just a few minutes, Steve's going to give his stone cold lock predictions for the opening day roster and the starting rotation for next year and look ahead a little bit. But one player I wanted to point out, and I was very impressed by him by seeing him in person, because on TV you don't see some of the things he does and in the locker room. Freddie Galvis, I think, has done a remarkable job of taking over the leadership role. He's one of the spokespeople in the clubhouse. He speaks up when there's issues. He can be vocal at times. And you don't see this on TV a lot, but he's always backing up other players. I mean, you talk about fundamental baseball. There's a ball hit to Franco, he's backing him up. If there's a easy hit ground ball to the second baseman, he's sliding over to second in case there's an overthrow. He plays the game the right way. He's fun to watch defensively. I don't know if his defense might be enough to keep him on this team, but I've certainly become a fan of him. What do you think, especially with J.P. Crawford struggling, do you think he will be a part of any kind of successful future the Phillies will have?
He also has a very high baseball IQ, which I think a lot of players over the last, you know, Cesar Hernandez has been hitting, but I don't think his, you know, baseball IQ is necessarily where Freddie Galvis is. Mm-hmm. He knows baseball, and you look at different players, and they talk about this a lot around the draft. Sometimes you're drafting somebody that is athletic versus somebody that is a baseball player, and Freddie is definitely a baseball player. Yeah. I've written a lot about his leadership, especially this year. I talked to him, and he said it's not really, he doesn't look at himself as the leader, but he's
almost by default he is.
Yeah, he's the longest tenured Philly there. But he said he's just kind of going in. He did learn a lot from, he mentioned, you know, Howard, Utley, those guys. He said he watched those guys day in, day out. He kind of picked up their work ethic, and he just shows up at the ballpark, and he says, every day when I show up, whatever happened yesterday, I just want to win today, and that's how I go about my business. And he said, if other guys kind of follow that, great. That's what I would like to do. You know, everybody should come in here like that. But that, he's not looking to come into the clubhouse and say, I'm the leader. But as far as going forward, if I'm the Phillies, I try and, especially because he's taken on this leadership role, he called out the team when they were out west and they weren't doing well, and they seemed to respond at least a little bit. It gave him somewhat of a spark. I would keep him on this team, trying to find a place. I know a lot of people were talking about a utility role for him if you have Cesar at second and whenever JP comes up at short. But I don't know if there's anybody in the majors right now at shortstop that you could say is playing better defense than Freddie at short. You know, maybe there's some guys on his level, but the defense, he's given you 20 last year, he had 20 home runs. I don't know if he's going to do that again this year, but he's giving you a little bit of power. On a winning team, Freddie Galvis could easily hit seventh or eighth, and you would be fine, and his defense would be great up the middle. And really, they were high on J.P. Crawford's defense. he has a decent amount of errors. Earlier, you know, a few weeks ago, I looked, he had, I think, 12 errors already this season. So his defense, I don't think, is as high as they thought. He's starting to hit a little bit. But I might even, if I'm the Phillies, whether it's this trade deadline, the offseason, I would think about if they're sold with Freddie at short, which I think they could be. Shot JP, and you know, I don't know if this is what they're going to, but float his name around, see if they can package him up with somebody else and make that a return for whether it's a number one starting pitcher whenever they want to do that. But I think that's something the Phillies should be thinking about if they're not already.
Don't forget, you can always catch Steve's articles at themorningcall.com. All right, we're time for our first break and also the chance to roll out the trivia question and give you a chance to win tonight's prize. By the way, the answer to last week's question, who was last year's All-Star MVP, Eric Hosmer of Kansas City. Congratulations to Scott of Copley for getting that answer. We have a Mets question this week, although it does have a little bit of a tie-in with the Phillies, who 1993 was pretty special in its own right. Who were the two managers of the 1993 New York Metropolitans? And here's more information on how and what you can win.
You could win a $10 gift certificate to use to see the latest movies and the hottest music, sports, and pay-per-view events on RCN On Demand. You can only win one gift certificate every 4 months. But if you haven't won a prize in the last 30 days, you may be able to win another great prize. Call or email us right now with your trivia response. Callers get priority. But if we don't get a caller with the correct answer during tonight's live sports talk show, we'll take all email responses and conduct a random drawing on our next live show to determine the winner. Watching the show on replay or VOD? Send us your guess now, and you just might win an RCN On Demand $10 certificate. Good luck with sports talk trivia.
For our first timeout feature of the evening, the Phillies' Brock Stassi was one of the feel-good stories at the end of spring training after making the opening day roster with an emotional press conference and interview once he found out he made the team. Now 4 months into the season, Stassi is working hard to try to keep himself in the big leagues.
You know, you're playing in bigger stadiums, going to bigger cities, stuff like that. There's still an adjustment period every day. You know, something kind of surprises me every day that I'm like, wow, this is pretty cool up here. But you know, things are starting to become more and more normal each day. But at first, it was a big adjustment.
It's a tough situation to be in when you're not facing pitching on a given day. I did it for a number of years at the big league level, and when you don't play a lot, 90 miles an hour looks like 98. So it's a tough gig.
I think I'm still learning every day. You know, I haven't had a ton of success doing it, but starting to get more of a better routine, get to prepare myself for that at bat, pinch hit, whether it be double switch, go out on defense or something like that.
And pinch hitting is really hard. There's not one person who would say that's the easy road in the big leagues. Is tough. I know what I can do, and I know certainly what I can't do. So I just try to narrow that down to focusing on what I can do. And if some guys can learn from that, great. Hopefully they learn from the good things, not the bad things.
I've been learning more and more each day, just talking to guys who've done it before, like Daniel Nava and Andres Blanco, and how they go about their day in order to prepare.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call. Our special guest, Stephen Gross, Phillies beat writer from The Morning Call, talking some Phillies baseball. We're going to talk trades in a little bit, some rumors that are out there, but first we want to get to, everyone's looking ahead to, and I wanted to pick Steve's brain here, and he was nice enough to put together who he thinks will be in the opening day lineup for next year, since every Phillies fan is looking ahead to 2018 and beyond. So I thought it was very interesting, some of your picks you have here. A lot of youth at the top of the lineup. Scott Kingery leading off. We heard a lot of buzz about him, and we'll be talking about him in our last segment when we talk about prospects in the American and National League. Jorge Alfaro also currently at AAA, along with Rhys Hotkins. Nick Williams just called up. And Aaron Altherr. You have five guys. I think Altherr is the only one that has, you know, about a year's experience, although he's been injured both last year and this year. But tell us, it's a very exciting top five of the order. Tell us about why you think these five guys are going to be in the opening day lineup next April.
It's really tough, especially, you know, before the trade deadline, before any winter moves. Mm-hmm. It's definitely possible that they get even just one veteran somewhere to plug in here, like they did this year with you know, Michael Saunders, Hallie Kendrick. But without knowing, I mean, it'd be almost impossible at this point to kind of predict that.
Yeah, so don't hold Steve to this. If they trade Iron Altair or whatever, you know, we won't come after you.
But I mean, these are the guys. Scott Kingery is close. I think watching him in spring training this year, I thought he was somebody that even when Cesar Hernandez first went down with his injury this year, and they knew he was going to be out, you know, at least a month or so, I thought he was somebody that they could have called up then. They didn't. They wanted him to see AAA. He's playing well. He's only been there a few weeks, but he's playing well there. I think, you know, you'll see him come up when the rosters expand at the end of the year. And he was a college pick in the draft. You know, he came out of college. He's somebody that is further along. I think he is on this team just coming out of spring training next year, as long as everything continues to go this way. You know, Alfaro, he's in his last option year, so he almost has to be up next year. And he's somebody that, you know, everybody's excited about. He's somebody that can bring the bat. He's getting more consistent on the defensive side of things, calling games this year. He's getting closer. If it wasn't for Tommy Joseph at first, I think Rhys Hoskins would already be up. So there's somebody else. You have Nick Williams up. You know, the rest of the lineup is already up there. Franco's the one. Even Herrera, those are two guys that have been kind of kicked around in trade rumors. It's possible they could trade those guys. I think if I had to put money on it, they're still in Philly. Franco's starting to just do enough that I think they're going to give him another year to see what he can do. I know going into this year, there was a lot of talk about Manny Machado. He was going to be a free agent. He was somebody that this was a make or break year for Franco, where the Phillies might, they have money to spend. Maybe they'll go out and get Machado, but Machado really has not done anything to write home about this year. So I don't think that's somebody that you'd really want to go out and spend a ton of money on anyway. So Franco, you know, certainly could be there again next year, and then you have Herrera and Galvis there at the bottom too.
Now Herrera, at the beginning of the year, they signed him to this 3-year mega $1 million contract. They make him the core, say he's our center fielder, he's our guy. You have him batting seventh, which I don't disagree with, but that kind of shows you how far off the map he has gotten. And I know a lot of people would be just as happy if they traded him or Franco, and you know, people are flighty a little bit. People aren't hitting well. They want to ship people off. But Herrera really hasn't impressed me at all this year. He's had some nice spurts. He can hit. But his base running and his routes in the outfield, I'm not a real big fan of Herrera. Do you think he'll be around, or could he be traded too?
I think he probably will be around, but depending what kind of, maybe more this offseason, if they put a package together, because when they feel that they're close to Phillies, that's when they're going to go out. They have a handful of prospects, maybe four or five that are up, that they're confident with moving forward. They're going to be a part of the future. That's when they're going to go out and start spending the money and bringing and just getting the last couple pieces. But it not might not only be just through free agency. It could also be we have these guys up here. We have extra prospects. We'll package them with Herrera because we have some extra outfielders that are coming up. And we'll trade. And that's how we'll get our number one starting. You know, maybe we'll sign a third baseman, spend a lot of money on a third baseman, but we'll put a package together to get our number one starting pitcher to go with, you know, the other guys there. So Herrera very much could be in a deal like that if they ever make one or when they make one like that, because he does have a very team-friendly contract. He's very inconsistent, though. If you look over the last couple years, just his batting, his end-of-the-year batting average is .280, .290 the last 2 years. But in those seasons, he's hit, you know, he's gone on a streak where over a month he's hit maybe 300, 350, even close to 400. And then he'll go a month or two where he's hitting 190 or 220. And then all of a sudden he picks up and he hits just well enough at the end of the season to bring his average back up to, you know. And he was, the other year, he was even in the conversation for a batting title for a little bit. So I think that's just the type of player he is. And I don't know if it's that he has trouble, you know, focusing or whatever, because he does put together great stretches, but then there's plays where there was a 2 or 3 game stretch, just I think it was about a month ago, where he gets picked off a third. Then there's another play where it's a full count and there's two outs and the runner should be going and the runner on first is going and he's standing on second yet. And then there was just
Mattingly for old time baseball.
Yeah, so
I am put myself as old-time baseball guy, too.
But he's not anywhere near, you know, I'm not necessarily sold on him. I think he can be, like Freddie Galvis, he can be a player on a winning team that mm-hmm. can contribute, and he can play very well at times. If they can kind of make him more consistent with his play in the field and his hitting, then, you know, then you're talking about somebody maybe that is more, not necessarily that you build around, mm-hmm. but somebody a little bit higher up in the lineup, too. But this is fluid, too, just because, I mean, Herrera this year has pretty much hit all the way up and down the order, too. He's hit at the top of the order. He's hit seventh. He's hit, you know, a little bit in the middle, kind of. So that's the thing, too, where starting out with this lineup, I'd probably, if I was the manager, this is the lineup we're going with, probably start him out lower. See where we go from them. But he is a guy that you could move up easily. You could lead him off. You could have him hit second.
Yeah. Sounds good. Stephen Gross, our special guest here in studio on RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call. Steve, outstanding beat writer for the Philadelphia Phillies. Keith is on vacation again. This is normally the part in the show where we do Growler's Grumblings, which we will not do today. But I do have an announcement to make, ironically, in the spot that is Growler's Grumblings. And before that, it was Joe's Take segment at this point in the show. We do have some news to report. Selfishly, it's sad news, but it's good news for Joe Craig. But Joe has decided late last week that he's going to be retiring from broadcasting and from his duties here at RCN TV. He has been thinking about it for a little while. He obviously was the co-host of this show with me for 14 years, and last fall he took over the Friday show duties with Dennis Lobb. That was our plan, to have him and Dennis do the Friday night show, the Football Friday edition of Sports Talk. But Joe has a lot of plans. He has two vacations, so one in late August, another in October. One's at least a two-week cruise. He's going to have some minor surgery, which he assured me it's nothing major, but that's also coming his way in the fall. And he said, honestly, looking at the schedule, he could have been here for a couple weeks and then not been here for a few weeks, and he didn't want to do that. He didn't want to be here and then have people filling in, and he wanted someone in that Friday night show to commit to the show and be there each and every week. So I'm disappointed by the decision. Obviously, Joe had his best interest in the hearts of those of us with the Friday night show. We're certainly going to miss him, even though he wasn't here with me on Thursdays. We still talked quite a bit during the Friday shows and quite a bit during this past off season as well. But he did assure me he is going to come in on the Thursday night show. He can talk about his decision to step down and retire from RCN. He did it his own way, which is good to see. And we're also going to talk about the 14 years we spent together on this show. So that's going to come up when I can ever find a date that Joe's going to be open in the fall. And also he'll be talking some high school football, I'm sure, too. But Joe has officially retired from broadcasting and from his duties here at RCN. We certainly wish he and his beautiful wife be well. And again, we hope to talk to him real soon on the show. All right, time for a second break, and we're caught up with Lehigh Valley basketball rankings, Tume Anderson, to get his thoughts on the summer basketball season so far. All right, we're out here enjoying another great summer of basketball, another hot day. We're here with Tume Anderson to pick his brain and get all of your basketball insights. Tume, of course, of LVBasketballRankings.com. Tume, first of all, what's been some of the biggest stories this summer in terms of local basketball?
Well, Chris, you know, as you know, Lehigh Valley is one of the hotbeds of basketball in all of Pennsylvania. The summer action has been very heated. We had the Cedar Beach throwdown Cedar Beach action last weekend. Now we're here at the A-Town throwdown. And throughout the summer league, Chris, I've been very impressed with a couple teams and players. Let's start off with Bangor, all right? The Jones brothers at Bangor. Really like the energy they're bringing with their guard, Mr. Holland, shooting from the outside. Look out for Bangor during a Colonial League season. As well, we'll also take a look at Bethlehem Catholic and Allentown Central Catholic. The Catholic schools are back. They're coming with a lot of vengeance. Bethlehem Catholic, the Young brothers in the paint. 6'10", 6'8", Division I prospects with J.P. Pass and Will Melson on the outside. Look for Bethlehem Catholic to be a big season. Also down Chew Street, Allentown Central Catholic returns all the players from last year. I love the big guy and big man in the middle, Keyshawn Kelman, with my man right here, Randy Atia. Allen, they're on a little bit of a slide, but they'll be okay. But Allentown Central Catholic, Bethlehem Catholic, Bangor, very impressive so far.
You know, I thought this was going to be an interesting summer because we had so many great players graduate last year, and there's a lot of holes to fill around a lot of teams.
Right.
But that creates competition, that creates people stepping up, and also coaches have to kind of work those new players in with the returning players.
True.
How do you think that story has developed, and has it change the landscape as far as who will be the favorites coming up this winter?
Well, you know, every year there are great players that come and they got to leave. So, you know, that's what they call these programs. You know, guys got to move up, and step up to the plate. So, yes, you know, we don't have the superstar talent, superstar talent, but there's still a lot of very good players, you know, D2, D3 players that are still, you know, playing hard and they should be recognized. So, I mean, yeah, guys are stepping into the plate. They played JV last year, the reserve guys last year. Now it's their chance to get underneath the bright lights and show what they can do.
A couple of teams I wanted to ask you about. One of them was Nazareth.
Yeah.
They took some lumps last year. They were very young. They've had some size. They've gotten guys that have gotten taller. They have some very good ball handlers. And then a couple of weeks ago, Jahan Dotson comes back. Experienced player, a great ball handler, great distributor.
Yeah.
Does that make Nazareth, does that put them in the upper echelon of the EPC right now?
Well, when you have a player of Jahan Dotson's work coming through, you know, you can't help. He's too good of an athlete, too good of a player not to put them in the upper echelon of the division. So, yes, he's coming in, and with Coach Joe Arndt, he runs great sets. Look for that flex. He's going to run that to the ground. Nazareth's going to be a team to be reckoned with. But, Chris, I got a sleeper for you, Chris.
Okay.
I got one.
You're
in
good
my
at
back
that.
Pocket.
Right.
All right. Those Deerup Huskies, ladies and gentlemen, look out for Deerup, all right? They're, you know, they have very good athletes, good size in the front court. Coach Joe has worked very hard to build that program up. This is their time. I see them making it to the EPC playoffs. You heard it here first, right here. LVBR is predicting that.
All right, that was the next team I was going to ask you about. So I'll move on to the next team.
Okay.
And I want to give you some props because last year, for our preview, you went out on a limb and said Easton was going to surprise some people. You said you were very high on Arnell Lewis. You said the big guys are going to really develop and make a name for themselves.
Sure.
And just a couple weeks into the season, they had a big win against Liberty.
Right.
Some nice wins over the course of the year.
Sure.
And even in their losses, they were in a lot of their games this year.
Well,
so I want to give you props for that. Do you think Easton now can make that next step and they can move into the upper echelon?
Well, Easton, they're a program that's on the rise, all right? They have a rising sophomore out there, all right? Mr. Ryan Boylan, excellent player. He had great experience last year, made some big plays for Ben Childs last year. Easton's a program on the rise. Jake Harris as well, having an awesome summer. Big man, 6'5 in the paint, very active. Easton's a team that, you know, you don't know what you're going to get. They're going to come out here, they're going to play hard every game. If they're making shots, they can beat you. If they're struggling from the perimeter, you know, they might struggle a little bit. But they're a program that I feel that should, they will be in the district playoffs and will be competing to make it to the EPC playoffs.
All right, two other teams I want to quickly ask you about. Emmaus, they lost to Cackle Reese Brothers, but they have the big guys all coming back. And their ball handlers, to me anyway, seem to be doing pretty well so far this summer. And, of course, your old stomping grounds at Parkland, they lost Sam Iorio. They have some big shoes to fill there. How have they been so far this summer?
Well, when we talk about Parkland, you know, when you talk about my old stomping ground, it's never rebuilding. All right, we're never rebuilding at Parkland, reloading. All right, so once again, Stevens comes in. His freshman team, his JV teams are all excellent teams. They're going to come in, and they're going to have another successful season. Yes, it may not be, you know, state quality, state playoff quality. They might, you know, but they're going to be a very quality team. And Emmaus, yes, they lost the Twins, but Matt Sable's back. Josh Harris is in the paint. And look out for Bryce Deal. Listen out for Bryce Deal, rising junior, having an awesome summer, 6'4 wing player, doing great things. So Emmaus, they lose a lot of guards, but they're very active, very athletic, very big, strong. And Coach Yoda does an excellent job. They will be in the mix for competing for a championship.
Quick reminder, just a few minutes left in our chance to win tonight's prize. The trivia question one more time. Who were the two managers of the 1993 New York Mets? Well, the Phillies were having glory going to the World Series. The Mets were struggling. Who were the two managers in that 1993 campaign? Don't forget, if we don't get a correct answer in the next few minutes, you can email your correct answer to us, rcnsportstalk@rcn.com. Same for people watching us on replay, on demand, on the Morning Call website, or listening to our podcast. Final segment with Stephen Gross, Phillies beat writer, and wanted to get your thoughts on the pitching going forward. We asked you to kind of project who might be in the opening day lineup, barring any trades. Aaron Nola, Jared Eichhoff, Nick Pivetta, as a solid starting three. Ben Lively, I thought, was interesting, who's kind of been up and down. A guy more of a control pitcher, not a power pitcher. And then Mark Leiter Jr. as your number five projected starting pitcher as of now. No Zach Eflin, no Jake Thompson, who both struggled quite a bit this year. So your thoughts about the Phillies pitching going forward for next year?
I think the Phillies will probably go out and just like they did the last few years, whether, you know, like with Hellickson, mm-hmm. Charlie Morton, Clay Buchholz. So those two didn't last
hopefully
long
more
because
Hellickson
of injury.
Than Buchholz or Morton, yeah.
But I think they would probably get somebody, just an, even an innings eater. They'll probably go out and look for somebody like that. So you can throw maybe that, you know, at least one veteran in with these guys. But just going off the guys in the roster, I think right now from where we are, these are the five that have the best shot to make next year's rotation. I mean, obviously with Eichhoff and Nola, they've both had their struggles at times this year, but I think they're continuing to grow. I think they're when you get finished with this rebuild, I think those are two guys that, you know, they might be number three, number four guys, mid to back end rotation guys, and they're going to be solid pitchers for you. Yep. And, you know, they're going to give you a chance to win every fifth day when they go out there. The other guys, I mean, what we've seen so far, Nick Pivetta has obviously done well in the short time up there. He's been very good at home. Mm-hmm. Not so good on the road, at least to start. He's starting to even out there, too. I think it's just a matter of time until he gets some experience up here. Ben Lively, he's showed some pretty good stuff when he was up in Philadelphia.
Working again, on change-ups,
yeah,
secondary pitches.
He was working on some stuff, but he showed, I think, at least some promise that you could look to this guy maybe in the future. I saw his first start back when he was with Lehigh Valley, his first home start with the Iron Pigs. I covered that game over there after he was sent back down, and he pitched real well that night. Mm-hmm. So he said he's just kind of going to keep trying to do what he was doing. He wasn't necessarily told there was anything specific that he had to work on. He wasn't told how long he could be down. So he's somebody that I think, as long as he keeps working, he's somebody that I think can be pretty good. And again, maybe a back-end rotation guy. All these guys, I think, are none of these guys are necessarily number one pitchers.
We only have a minute left, but I wanted to try to get you, pin you down for a trade deadline deal. Everyone likes to see a big deal. I don't think we're going to see a big one like when Utley and Cole got traded, or Cole Hamels. But who do you think in 30 seconds might be dealt, or what type of player might they get?
I think there's almost a guarantee that Pat Neshek could be gone by July 31st. The other guys that you've heard about, Hellickson, Kendrick, Benoit, Nava, all those guys can go, and it's possible that they go before the July 31st deadline. Mm-hmm. But those guys can also, I think they'll be pretty easy to get through on waiver deals, so they can go
August.
At any time, in August. But there's always the possibility of, you know, Tommy Joseph, if they find a suitor for him, so they can get Rhys Hoskins up. Cesar Hernandez, if knowing that Kingery's in the pipeline, and like we said, Odubel Herrera before, all those guys, there's very slim chances with those guys, that the last three that I mentioned, but there's always a chance there too. But Pat Neshek, if I had to put money down, he's the guy that I'd be shocked if he was still in Philadelphia August 1st.
Steve, thanks so much for your time. Continued success at the Morning Call covering the Phillies, and best of luck on your upcoming wedding.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hope to have you back again real soon. A little more optimism with the Phillies when you're here. When Tom Houseck was here, they were going through their worst stretch in years, so it's good they're a little bit more optimistic right now. All right, time for our final timeout of the evening. Here's a sample of some of the high school summer basketball interviews available on the RCN TV website.
I think when you play for a place like Central Catholic, there's always a little bit of a target, but I think especially coming back, this is the first year in a while it feels like we have everybody coming back other than the three seniors we had last year, but overall good group coming back. We're pretty confident we can make a good run.
There's definitely more expectations from around the league because we're a predominantly senior team with maybe two sophomores and one junior. So, as you said, we have everyone but three players from last year, so I think we'll do pretty well this year.
You know, like, when you're in the off season, especially when we have other players doing other sports, it gives us chances to get rusty, but playing together really gives us the opportunity to stay in sync.
As a group of girls we have now, we've been playing, the majority of us have been playing together since first, second grade, so it's awesome to have our chemistry build so high and now be the leaders of the team, and we know what each other's are doing, we're all really encouraging, it's a really good thing.
We all have been coming to open gyms, which we have like every day of the week, and we just, you know, we're conditioning a lot of us play other sports in the fall, and some of us are playing tournament basketball, and it's all just helping.
It's pretty big just chemistry wise. I mean, wins and losses, I mean, they matter and they're fun to play for the wins and stuff, but it's really about the chemistry. You know, coach always tells us that the chemistry, it's the best part. It's not, you want to win in like March and stuff. That's what coach always tells you. Want to win in March and February, not really. You want to come out here and win the summer league tournament this summer. It's fun, but it's mainly to build for the winter.
Are you surprised how fast you've come together, considering you lost two players of the Kako Reese's talent?
Yeah, we lost two big players, but I mean, we've all been playing with each other for years and years now, so it didn't take too long for us to just get those old habits back and just play as one.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call. Our special guest, Mike Ventola, now joining us, play-by-play announcer for the Reading Fighting Phils. I know after 40 years I want to say Reading Phillies, but you've been the Fighting Phils now for a couple years. A lot of great excitement over the new name. And, Mike, a lot of great excitement about the players you have in Reading and teams in the Eastern League overall. So thanks so much for joining us and sharing your expertise.
Oh, Chris, it's a pleasure being here. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, we'll start with your team, the Fighting Phils, and a lot of hot prospects that you have seen this year. The biggest name, though, Scott Kingery.
Yes.
People in the Lehigh Valley, people in the Philadelphia and Delaware Valley, they have been hearing about this kid for a couple months now. A lot of excitement, a lot of people saying bring him up. First of all, tell us a little bit about him. What type of player is he?
Well, for those of you who here in this area got a chance to, of course, watch Chase Utley all those years, he is very Chase Utley-esque.
Wow.
Also, a lot of similarities to Dustin Pedroia as well, too, just in preparation, and maybe even size as well, too, and just the way he goes about playing the game all the time, and really a special player. And, you know, his work ethic was unbelievable. He was so easy to work with and, you know, just an all-around great guy. And I think once he does get up to Philadelphia in the short term, I think Philly fans are going to realize that this is the guy that they've been wondering, well, who's going to replace Chase Utley?
Yeah.
They have their answer. It is Scott Kingery.
Yeah, and not to be too much of a pessimist here, but, you know, Dominic Brown was supposed to be the next five-tool great player. J.P. Crawford was supposed to be that next superstar. Hasn't quite worked out as of yet. But you really think that he is the real deal?
Oh, without question. And, you know, I understand, too, a lot of people are putting it out there that, you know, he's taking ground balls at third. He's, you know, he has the ability to play in the outfield. And he does. He could be a good third baseman. He could be a good outfielder.
Mm-hmm.
And at one time, he played shortstop when he was younger, too. But to me, if the Phillies are going to best utilize his talents and best utilize his skills, why take away something that isn't broken? Keep him at second base, and you know, if there's other questions in other areas, use other people to fill those other areas. So for me, Scott Kingery, allow him to be the A-plus player he is at second base and allow him to really progress where he's currently at up here in Lehigh Valley. So then when he does get to Philadelphia, he'll be ready to go.
Yeah, because that was the buzz a couple weeks ago. Tom Houseck of The Morning Call put out the video of Kingery taking ground balls at third base.
Yep.
People aren't real high on Mikhail Franco right now, so they're looking maybe him move up. Cesar Hernandez also, you have a logjam. You have a logjam at first base. You have a logjam possibly now at second base, but you're for keeping him at second base.
Yes, and you know, and I got a chance to see a little bit of Cesar when he was in Reading back in 2014. He had to do a short little stint with us, and don't get me wrong, he can flat out hit, you know, and I think if you want to keep Cesar around, well, then maybe I would look to him to potentially moving, but I don't think that's the case. I think if I were in the role of the Phillies and making those decisions, I would wholeheartedly think about moving him. And, you know, just because, you know, seeing what I've seen out of Scott Kingery this year, I just think that he is the guy. And, you know, for Cesar, you know, it's a shame because he had, before he got hurt, he was probably arguably the best player on the team with how well he was playing for the Phillies and, you know, what he has contributed when healthy. So, you know, my hope in a perfect world, I'd like to keep them both because I do think both can be so productive with one another. But the only way that makes that happen is if one of them moves. And to me, that would have to be Cesar. Could Cesar play third? You know, could Cesar play short? But right then and there, there's more log jams because you look at what Freddie's doing, and then J.P. Crawford coming, and then you mentioned about Mikhail Franco. You know, for me, I'm in the minority. I'm not ready to give up on Mikhail. So, you know, just because his ceiling is so high, you know, and right now this is, and I've said this before, it's a good problem right now what Philadelphia is going through. You know, if there's such thing called a good problem, this is a good problem.
Yeah. Last Kingery question before we move on, too. A lot of people are saying call him up now. Let's see what he can do. Other people say he could be on the opening day roster 2018 with the Phillies, even if he doesn't get a September call-up. So where do you think the timetable for him will be? Could he be on the opening day roster for 2018 in Philadelphia?
I think he has that capability. I'm actually in the, I guess, maybe the not-so-popular crowd. Keep him in Lehigh Valley this year. You don't have to necessarily start his clock. And he's not a part of and the nice thing, too, is if you don't start his clock, you don't have to worry about protecting him either in regards to the Rule 5 draft. So that's what I mean. Why rush him, in a sense? Allow him to get his licks at AAA. Allow him to finish out the season strong there. Because some people think that it's a failure that if a player doesn't get up to the big leagues in a September call-up. I don't think that's the case all the time.
Especially if the Iron Pigs are in the playoffs.
Exactly,
the Phillies like to keep them in that postseason atmosphere.
And, Chris, you saw it last year, too, with us in Reading. People were clamoring for Rhys Hoskins and Dylan Cousins. to get up here to Lehigh Valley. And you know what? The Phillies stood their ground and said, you know what? Let's allow them to enjoy success at their certain level. I think fans at times, fans are extremely knowledgeable. What fans don't understand on this side of the realm is that when players are having success, the organization wants them to enjoy that success. But then when they have that failure, learn from that failure, and then going back to having that success before they allow them to move on. So, you know, I think for Scott right now, and I think that's going to be the case with Reese and with Dylan and a lot of these, some of these guys, they're going to finish out the year in Lehigh Valley just because if when they do make the playoffs, they want them to get another more taste of that playoff atmosphere, because when the time comes when they do it with the Phillies in a hopefully in a short amount of years, they'll be ready to go.
All right, I want to get your thoughts on some of the other prospects first with Reading and then some of the other teams in the Eastern League
Yes. That's
of interest to clubs in our viewing area. But with Reading, Carlos Tatche, I believe, was on the All-Star game,
Yes. Made
the All-Star team a couple of weeks ago, hitting 300, leading the international, the Eastern League, excuse me, in triples. Can he be another one of those players? There's a lot of great outfielders or potential great outfielders in the Phillies pipeline. Could Carlos be one of those guys to knock on the Major League door soon?
I think he still has a little work to do. I think eventually he could get to that point. When I look at Carlos Tatche, defensively he could play in center field right now. He's that good defensively. He covers a lot of ground. His arm is solid. I always like to say glides like a gazelle out there. It's very graceful when he's going after fly balls. He's made some pretty neat catches already this year. My question with him though is, and he's a good hitter. He hits for average. There are two aspects in regards to his game I'd like to see him improve. One, he needs to get a little stronger. Though he has two home runs at this point on the season, he's starting to finally get his power stroke a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think once he can get a little stronger and maybe eventually hit 10, 12 home runs, I think that would be a nice solid number for him. But one area, too, is I like to see him steal a little bit more. He only has one stolen base at this point, and he's only been thrown out four times. So he hasn't really taken that many attempts. So yeah. I'm not asking, you know, for me, I don't think he has to be a world beater on the base paths, be like a Roman Quinn type or anything like that. But steal some bases, show you could be a little threatening, and then also, too, get a little bit stronger and so you can hit for a little bit more power. But besides that, I think he's a guy that the Phillies are going to eventually see. Maybe not next year. Could be the year after, even the year after that. So because he's only 21 years old, so and you look at the outfield talent there is right now, you could be a little bit more patient with him.
Yep. Any other positional players at Reading that have really impressed you or people that is in the lower minors coming up through the Phillies that you're excited to see in the near future?
Well, you know, right now currently in Reading, I've been very excited about Drew Anderson. He's currently on the 40-man roster. You know, he has been, you could see why the Phillies put him on the 40-man, to, not only to protect him, but they also see that he's a guy that if they had no choice in bringing him up, his stuff is very good. Mm-hmm. He's consistently with his fastball and in the low 90s, but he can pump it up to 95, 96. He's been working on his curveball. He's been working on his changeup. After the All-Star break and once he gets a chance to get going, I do think we're going to kind of see more of the guy that the Phillies saw when they put him on the 40-man roster. In the lower levels, you got to look at what Lakewood's doing right now with Sixto Sanchez and Ranger Suarez and a lot of these pitchers. There's some big-time arms coming up in the system, Chris. And, you know, right now, when you actually look at the Phillies and their starting pitching, to me, they have a lot of twos and threes and fours and some fives. There's no ace yet. And that's, you know, just kind of from what I've seen. And I'm a big fan of guys that are up in the big leagues like Ben Lively and a Nick Pivetta, you know, and eventually when Zach Eflin gets healthy. And I was a huge supporter of Aaron Nola, even despite what happened with Nola earlier this year. So these are all good guys and guys are going to be mainstays in the rotation. But they are looking at ace types. And I think Sixto Sanchez may be that guy that's coming up right now that Philly fans need to get a little bit more excited about.
Yeah, probably a couple of years away, though.
Yes, of course.
Because people, again, want to call him up right away, and he's very young, having success at low A ball or high A ball now. But Sixto's probably a couple of years away.
Oh, absolutely. He's probably easily 2-3 years away yet. So,
another pitcher I want to ask you about, Drew Anderson. I believe he was also named to the Eastern League All-Star team.
Yes.
Decent numbers.
Yes.
Doesn't overwhelm you statistically, though. Tell us a little bit about him and his ceiling.
You know, when I look at Drew, I think he's a guy that's eventually, he has the ability to get into the Phillies rotation down the line. You know, as I said a little earlier, I know, like, right now with his secondary pitches, that's what he's working on big time with his changeup and with his curveball, trying to mix in a slider a little bit. You know, his fastball has good life on it. It's got some good movement. And, you know, when I've talked to the coaches in Reading, you know, they sat there and said, you know, he's a guy that's probably as close to a sure thing as there is on this Reading roster right now. So being that, you know, Scott Kingery and Andrew Pollan and a couple other key guys, Justin Terrien, have now moved up to AAA, that I think guys are all capable of getting to the major leagues. So, you know, for Drew Anderson right now, I think he's obviously going to finish the year out in AA. You know, Reading right now is in a good position to make the playoffs, so he may get a playoff start underneath his belt, which will be very important. So, you know, I think for Drew, stay the course. And, you know, then when you get into next season, could be his chance to move up.
Well, you get a chance to see a lot of great players and teams in the Eastern League. Of interest to our viewers, the Mets, Yankees, Red Sox, and the Nationals. Who are some of the players that have stuck out in your mind at those different organizations?
You know, it's funny because I have not seen Harrisburg and Binghamton as much as I would have liked to have seen at this point. But when I look at, when I kind of look at both of those teams, a guy that really stood out to me for Harrisburg in the Washington Nationals AA affiliate was catcher Rowdy Reed, who's currently on the 40-man roster for the Washington Nationals. Trying to improve defensively. You could see his potential with the bat, but you could see that he received pitches well. He had a good rapport with his starting pitching that when I got a chance to see with the Fighting Phils playing the Senators this season. And Jose Marmolejos as well, too, who can play first, can play a little bit in the outfield as well, too. Those are two guys from the national standpoint, I think, that have a chance. What I liked about Marmolejos is he had good presence at the plate, very patient, had some pop, and, you know, was a guy that, even despite Reading taking full advantage of Harrisburg when they last met in Harrisburg a couple weeks ago, Marmolejos and Reed were two guys that definitely stood out. You know, for Binghamton right now, they have some older guys on this team, you know, that guys that, you know, have been kind of like minor league vets. The catcher that stands out to me is Thomas Nito. He's been pretty good. They expect him to potentially be the starting catcher, according to Baseball America, in 2020. So actually, him and I, we share the same birthday, which is pretty odd. So I found that little tidbit. But, you know, but the Yankees right now and the Red Sox, those two teams really stand out to me. And, you know, when I was, we had just got done playing Portland not too long ago. And, you know, for the Sea Dogs, they have some pretty good hitters in that lineup. You know, I look at a guy like Danny Mars, a center fielder, good leadoff guy, had the ability to get on base. A guy that I saw earlier in the year is now up with Pawtucket, Nuri Tavares. Kid could flat out hit, played the corner outfield spots very well. You know, and Boston right now is a pretty crowded outfield situation, so it'll be interesting to see if and when Tavares can break through and get up to the big leagues. So, but then the Yankees, you know, kind of wrapping up with them, Domingo Acevedo is going to be the future ace of the New York Yankees. And I say that with the utmost confidence and the utmost, I've been with Reading now 4 years. To me, I don't think I've seen a pitcher of his stuff and his stature at 6'7", 250 that is going to be as ace-like as there is. Fans of the AL East that root for other teams better watch out for this kid. He stays healthy. He already had a stint up in AAA, a plus fastball, breaking ball, extremely strong. And not only with him, but Justice Sheffield as well, too, was a pretty good left-handed starter I saw. Though he just got an oblique injury, he's going to be out for 6 weeks. 21 years old, actually made his AA debut against Reading in the playoffs last season. So there are a lot of players in the AL East and the NL East right now. The East in a short amount of time to me is going to become more of the dominant divisions in both the American and National League. I know it's been kind of favored in the West right now a little bit with the Dodgers and things of that nature. So, but the East is going to get very strong very soon.
Boy, the Yankees have been loaded the last couple of years. They just keep bringing up monster prospect. People are really excited about what Aaron Judge did during the All-Star break and the Home Run Derby. They have stud pitchers coming up there. And then you have the Mets that I thought were going to be really loaded for a while. Things are not obviously working out well for them at the big league level. And the Nats, I you know, as I said a couple of weeks ago on the show, they're going for it. They're going for the World Series now, which I applaud them for. Phillies did it a couple of years ago. Now they're struggling.
Right.
Nats traded away a whole bunch of top prospects. They want to win now, but they need to replenish that farm system too. So those are, I think, some of the interesting stories with the Nationals and with the Mets, how quickly they can get back up to speed and have some of those major prospects like the Yankees have.
Well, you know, when I look at the Mets, and it's amazing because, you know, that rotation with Noah Syndergaard and Steven Matz and Jacob DeGrom and Zach Wheeler. I mean, those were
some big. They thought they were going to dominate.
They absolutely thought they were going to dominate. Now, the injury bug bit them. Yeah. You know, some things supposedly in the clubhouse, things of that nature. The guy that I'm excited that if and when, you know, he can get up there, when I saw him at Binghamton was Ahmed Rosario, kid, shortstop, coming into the season, top prospect in the Mets organization. So, you know, if they can replenish with some of that talent up there and can get healthy, I think the Mets, you know, they can get through some of their woes right now and kind of get back to where they're looking for. You know, for the Nationals, they're another team. You know, they are, as you said, built more of a win-now team, but for whatever reason, it's been a lot of back and forth. I know a lot of the speculation, too, what's Bryce Harper's future going to be like? Yep. You know, could it be a Philly down the road? Could it be a Yankee down the road? So, you know, the time for the Nationals and even the Mets, you said, was to win now. And quite frankly, I don't know if that's going to be the case. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But like I said earlier, I do think the East, though, once some of these lower levels, especially with the Nationals, they have some pretty good guys coming up from Potomac, and you know, and even some of the lower levels as well too. So, and right now with the Mets, you know, they have some guys down in St. Lucie, and once they eventually get to Binghamton and up to Las Vegas, and start pushing some guys up. You know, the East, it's just, it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah. Mike, thanks so much for all your insights and for coming in. I know you're busy this time of year. We appreciate it.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure being back here in the Valley. So.
All right. Mike Vintola, play-by-play announcer for the Reading Fightin' Phils, talking about the Phillies prospects as well as prospects with the Mets, Yankees, Nationals, and Red Sox. And that'll do it for tonight's edition of RCN Sports Talk. We thank you for joining us. Don't forget, next week, we're going to be out with our final Buffalo Wild Wings show of the summer, plus some more remote shows coming your way in August. We'll have more details on that on future editions of Sports Talk. And a special program in 2 weeks here in studio. We're going to have two legends, Bob Shriver and Bob Stemm. We know a thing or two about Easton and Peaburg football. They'll be talking about Lehigh Valley sports issues, Easton, Peaburg, and everything going on with the new classifications and new leagues. And you better believe they're going to have some strong opinions on that. So that's coming up in studio 2 weeks on Sports Talk, Bob Shriver and Bob Stemm on Sports Talk. Until next time, I'm Chris Michael. Thanks for watching. Good night, everyone.